I've had this experience over the last several months where I just don't, what do I say, practice anymore. I don't meditate anymore. I don't contemplate these things anymore. I used to love, I remember 4 or 5 years ago, I would just love reading and listening to these wisdom texts, Ramana Maharshi and Nisargadatta and Meister Eckhart and all of your videos. And I would just like drown myself in it. And that was all I wanted to do anytime that I had any free time. And I'm sure many people in this room can resonate with that. But I just like, now if I try to listen to something or read something, it actually feels artificial. And I just feel like, well, I'm just going to live my life. I get up, make coffee or tea and play one of my instruments. I go teach. I'm working on this project or that project and I'm just living. And it almost feels like this is what I felt like before I had what I would call this deep interest in truth and this awakening experience. It's kind of like, I've just gone back to living life, except the difference now is like, I don't suffer as much.
Yes. Yeah. But when you've arrived on the Caribbean beach, you stop reading the map.
Yeah.
The map's done its job. You pass it on.
Except when
you're not supposed to sit on your deck chair reading the map.
And actually, what you were saying, I said how I left yesterday, and I was chatting with Ben outside. We were actually talking about this, and I told him. But now, what happens is, it's not that I never feel sad or I never feel anxious. So it doesn't happen that often. Maybe every 3 or 4 weeks. I don't know. It's hard to say. But I'll notice it. But I'm so quick.
Yes.
Like, I'm like, oh, there it is. And then that day, for a couple hours, I'll be doing neti-neti or disentangling.
You notice it. You find your own way back very quickly.
Yeah.
It doesn't, you don't go into a depression for 2 weeks. It doesn't call them a drama in your relationship or with your friends. You just take care of it. It might take you a few minutes or a few hours. But then you go back to yourself. And in other words, the map's available when you need it.
Yeah.
But you don't keep reading it when you don't need it. No, that's how life's supposed to be.
So you don't that's an emergency approach? Because I was like, oh, am I just reacting? I should be more preemptive and I'm reacting.
If there is this deep satisfaction in you, this imperturbable peace and causeless joy most of the time, then the map has done its work, but you have it there on your shelf. You know, when something happens and you lose yourself in the content of experience, so you find your way back quickly, and that's how life's supposed to be.
Okay.
I'm going to confess something to you, which I fear will disappoint you, but I hope I don't lose too much credibility with too many of you. What do you think I'm reading at the moment? You think I'm reading Balayani or Meister Eckhart? I'm reading the Bitcoin Standard. Why? Because my son's fascinated by finance, and I want to understand his world, and I love him, and I want to have a language that I share with him. So I'm just learning the language of finance. It's absolutely riveting. It's so interesting. I'm loving it. I'm learning all sorts of things that I had no idea about, like finance and the gold standard and how economies work. And I've never been remotely interested in such matters, and I'm not inherently interested in them now, but I love my son, and I'm very close to him, and I want a shared language. I want to be interested in his world. I want to understand his world and the way. So I'm reading it, and so I don't go home in the evening and sit down as I used to for 40 or so years and read Krishna Menon and Ramana Maharshi and Rumi. And I did that for a long, long time. Yeah. But I don't do that now. Occasionally I might take one of my books off the bookshelf and just read a sentence or a paragraph at most, and I appreciate it. So I read those sacred texts in the same way that I enjoy listening to a Bach prelude. It's the same. I just love hearing this understanding formulated in the Sufi tradition, in the Vedantic tradition, in the mystical Christian tradition. But I read very little. Actually, I think very little about these matters now. You know, when Kira and I are alone at home, we talk about what we're going to cook for dinner and where we're going to go for a walk. We're not discussing these matters. I mean, for 45, 50 years, I was thinking and talking about nothing else. But a time comes when you've thought about everything. You don't know what else to think. But until I have a conversation with someone, or one of you asks me a question. In fact, there have been several. It's been very beautiful this week. I've noticed that several of you have asked me questions that I've never been asked before and never thought about before. So then my mind loves that. And I formulated things here this week that I've never formulated before and never even thought of before. So when a new question comes, or when I have a new podcast conversation with someone, then, and someone brings a new perspective or a new idea, then my mind will engage immediately, and I enjoy that. But left to my own devices, I'm not thinking and reading about these things. I'm just leading a very ordinary, simple, beautiful, loving life.
Yeah.
Creative.
Yeah. Yes, in the same way, Rupert. I mean, all I want to do is play my instruments and work on my projects. And before I go to bed, I like watching or listening to comedy. I just like laughing. You know, I laugh a lot. And I just like, I love music and I love laughter. And
comedy.
Comedy
is one of the great pathways to the recognition of our true nature. Not many comedians know this. Most comedians think that comedy is that they're there to entertain people. This is not true. Mm. Comedy is not about entertainment. Mm. Commentary is one of the direct paths to a glimpse of our true nature. Pete knows this, but not most comedians think that comedy is entertainment. It's not. It's a beautiful vehicle for giving people a glimpse, a taste of their true nature, and it's very direct and very powerful. So I understand why you like listening to watching comedy.
Mm-hmm. And one last thing, it actually made me wonder, like, why am I still coming to retreat?
Yeah, for no reason.
Yeah.
And that's the best reason for coming to a retreat. You come for no reason, you know, there's that story. Somebody reminded me of it in the lunch queue the other day. The monk who was traveling from monastery to monastery, and he comes to one monastery, and one of the resident monks says to him, "Oh, I presume you've come to hear the teacher's marvelous teaching." And the monk says, "No, I haven't." And the resident monk says, "Oh, I suppose you've come to sit in the teacher's presence." And the monk says, "No, I haven't." And then the resident monk says, "Why have you come?" And in the traditional story, the monk answers, "I've come to see how the teacher ties his shoelaces." But there's a higher reason. In my version of the story, the resident monk says, "This is a new version of the story." The resident monk says, "Oh, I suppose you've come to see how the teacher ties his shoelaces." And he said, "No, I haven't come for that reason." So the resident monk says, "Well, why have you come then?" And he says, "For no reason." Mm. That's the highest reason. You don't come for a reason. you just come to just to be in this beautiful community of friends, and it's the best reason for doing anything is for no reason. You don't need to get anything from being here, nor do you need to give anything. You do give something, but we all give something, but not because we want to, not because we have a mission, not because we're trying to change anybody or enlighten. We don't. Why do you know? Flowers don't bloom for a reason. They don't bloom in order to enlighten anybody or change anybody or transmit any. They just bloom. So that's the best reason for coming here, just to be with this beautiful, amazing group of people, and just to be and to give and receive whatever it is in the moment. That's a good reason for coming. Some people come to this understanding and they realize there's no reason to go to a retreat anymore, and they stop coming to retreats. And that's also perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. That would be another possibility, that you feel a very dear friend of many of us here came to me. I think it was the end of the retreat this time last year, and she's been coming for many, many years, and she said, came out to me at the end, and she said, "Rupert, I'm not going to see you again. This is my last retreat. I'm not coming back anymore." She just came to say goodbye and thank you. And we'd known each other for years, and we just had this beautiful, poignant parting. So for her, she came to this understanding, and she said, "I don't need to come anymore, and therefore I'm not going to come anymore." Somebody else might come to the same recognition. I'm complete. I don't need to come, but I'm going to keep coming. And I know this is true for many of you, many of you who have been coming for many years. I know that you don't need to come. You've recognized your true nature. You do so just because you love to do so, for no reason. There are many of you here that are here for that reason. So, but both are possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So don't feel badly if you feel there's no reason to be here. If you don't feel like coming back, don't come back. We'll miss you, but it's okay. We're all supposed to graduate. And then we should only stay if it's just what we love to do, but for no reason. Mm-hmm. So just keep playing your instruments and watching your comedies. And I hope we'll see you from time to time.
Thank you, Rupert. Yeah.